UBS has over 900 investment analysts from over 100 different countries.
Over 900 of the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance today.
To find out how we could help you,
contact us at ubs.com.
There is no doubt this is a challenging moment for many businesses across many sectors. Travel, hospitality, food and drink, manufacturing, and on and on. So, understandably, there is a lot to be feeling uneasy about right now. At the same time, business is booming for others, especially those who deliver goods direct to people's homes, where many of us are spending all of our time these days. Yet, most business leaders are just trying to work through each day amidst the global pandemic, 24 hours at a time. What can we afford? What can we create? And what to do about that new product which was in the works? And while short-term and long-term goals are now completely altered, it's also a perfect moment to think about what we stand for and what is our purpose. It's a great time to step back and see the bigger picture. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. On this show, I often say we're not so much a how-to show, like what to name your brand or how to win over VCs, but rather a show bringing you guidance and inspiration from founders in all sectors from around the world. Today, we unveil a brand new format where we take questions direct from listeners. Stay tuned for our expert panel this week with Pip Jameson. And later, we'll hear from an ad man, Niels Leonard, on how to kick things into gear, to stop asking what next, and to start offering solutions and ideas to your clients and customers. But first, here's Monocle's editor-in-chief and business owner himself, Tyler Brulé, with a moment of clarity in these interesting times.
Have you taken time out to dream lately? Heaven knows you have enough hours in the day at the moment. And no, I'm not talking about where you're going to fly when the skies properly reopen, or where you're going on holiday, or the house you're going to build on Puget Sound when you retire. I'm thinking more about the business you're running, or the one you're thinking of launching. It's not news that adverse conditions often create the ideal starting point to embark on a new venture. It could very well be that you're listening to this and you found yourself laid off, or perhaps you're in a tricky spot with a family enterprise you've inherited and it's time to make some tough decisions. Slim down, or simply close down. This is where the dreaming bit comes in. If you're a more rational type who trades in hard facts and spreadsheets, this might all sound a bit too fluffy for you, but go with me for a moment. I'm not big on new style management or talent hocus pocus either, but I do like to sit on the train or lie back on the sofa and think through ideas by picturing how the new venture will look, where it might be based, who I'd hire, and what the logo would look like, and much, much more. As the world has come to a screeching halt with a super annoying virus, it's revealed a host of opportunities for virtually every sector of the economy. If you need a bit of a nudge to kickstart your imagination, what about moving into manufacturing? Yes, I get that you might enjoy your job at a fancy management consultancy, but are you really that happy? Really, really? Perhaps you'd find more satisfaction producing something rather than just making presentations all day. What would you like to make? Wooden stepping stools in Bavaria? The most premium olive tapenade in Portugal? Nice-looking children's luggage made in Slovenia? Actually, wait, scratch that last idea, as kids don't need their own luggage and function much better when they're less encumbered in airports and rail stations. One thing we've learned over the past few weeks is that the global supply chain is perhaps a bit too global. Too few factories control the output of key products, there's too much reliance on low-cost labor under questionable regimes, and not enough being made close to our own home markets. While I like supporting smaller independents whenever possible, I also like that I can go to a bigger grocery store and be reminded what's made in my local market, in this case, Switzerland. Despite some of the highest labor costs in the world, I can buy brooms, pots and pans, plastic storage bins, envelopes, pens and pencils, and a collapsible clothes drying rack. This is encouraging as it reveals you can make everyday items in a super expensive economy like Switzerland, but also create different pools of labor, cut down on the economic and environmental burn of logistics, and also appeal to a national sense of pride by supporting the home team. And no, there's nothing wrong with a bit of flag waving, especially when it's as graphically arresting as a white cross on a red background. For Monocle in Zurich, I'm Tyler Brulé.
Thank you, Tyler. And you can read more from Tyler and our editors on navigating the choppy months ahead by subscribing to the Monocle Minute and the Monocle Weekend Edition newsletters. You can sign up at monocle.com. And of course, do stay tuned to Monocle 24. Now, it's time for a brand new segment on this show where we discuss questions from our listeners. Today, our expert guest is none other than Pip Jamieson, the founder and CEO of The Dots, a professional network for creatives and a resource for companies and brands to help bring their ideas to life. Pip will be a familiar voice to listeners, featured on episode 216 and more recently on episode 416 for our special on how to secure funding. Pip, welcome back to the show. First off, I'd love to just hear from you. Many people on The Dots will, of course, be used to flexible working and thinking outside the box, but no doubt they're still concerned about spending, projects, job security. How's this time been for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit heartbreaking, to be honest. I mean, we've got 500,000 members that work across the creative industries. So not just creators, but people who are like project managers, producers, who kind of make ideas happen. About 41% of our community is freelance. And to be honest, they were the first that were really hard hit. Yeah, as companies sort of got uncertainty, they were, you know, the ones that were scaled back first. So I must admit, it's been a bit of heartbreaking watching them having to cope with the new reality. But I guess on the same side, you know, we are a professional network and we are here to help them as much as possible. So very quickly, we kind of launched things like we have a COVID support hub now where they can help each other with advice and questions around government schemes and what they might get in terms of compensation. So, yeah, it's been heartbreaking, but also, I guess, you know, it's also been nice to know that we can help at this time. But, yeah, it's very, very tough times for a lot of people out there right now.
I want to bring in our first guest now because his question really raised an important point that a lot of people, I think, have been talking about. And that's sort of how to stay prioritized, how to stay busy, but also how to put yourself out there and make people aware that you are available for work and for projects. So our first guest is Francisco Souza, who lives in Cork. He's originally from Brazil. Francisco, welcome to the show. You are an automation engineer who manages a small and highly specialized automation business. Is that right? Can you explain a little bit for us?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, as you said, my name is Francisco and I'm an automation engineering manager for a small and a very highly specialized automation business. And what my company do, basically, we provide automation services to the big pharmaceutical corporations. So it's a very kind of a need niche at the moment, I would say. And what I have been seeing lately is that some of the small and the even big business are continuing to engage on recruitment. So my question is it a smart move to hire or even keep an eye on potential resources at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it's really early days to know right now. But what we are seeing is it completely depends on the industry. So, you know, a lot of our clients, for example, are technology companies. So the likes of Google, the likes of Spotify, those companies are kind of thriving right now. And actually, you know, someone like Apple, for example, are seeing they've got a lot of cash reserves, so they're not going to be hit by this downturn. And they're actually seeing it as an opportunity to hire brilliant talent because there will be more available brilliant talent. I mean, here in the UK, we have been working under full employment for a long time now, which means it's really been a seller's market where individuals have had the choice of where they go and companies are fighting for the best talent. What we're suddenly seeing is a shift where there is a lot more available talent on the market. So the people that do, or the companies that do have the cash reserves and have continued to have demand through this time, have suddenly got amazing choice and are really looking at smart ways to build their employer brand and smart ways to keep hiring, even if they don't necessarily need the talent right now because they see it as an opportunity to snap up good talent. So, you know, if you're looking for ace talent and you have the available cash reserves and you feel like your business is going to grow through this period or you forecast it to grow maybe after this period, then it is a smart time to start hiring because there is so much brilliant talent that is now available, sadly, as well for them. But, you know, it is a good opportunity to hire if you're in a position to do so.
Francisco, great question, and we appreciate you coming on the show for that. We hope we provided some clarity there. I just wanted to bring in a couple of other questions that we got, Pip, from listeners. A really interesting one that came in from Northern Italy, in fact, one of the regions obviously hardest hit by this pandemic. It's from an optician, and it's about how to sort of stay busy and prioritize in this time. And I think actually we can listen to that question now.
Hello, my name is Chiara Veronese, an optician and owner of a small independent optical store near Padova in Northern Italy called Centro Ottico Bastia. I took over the business from my father after he retired in 2016, and this past December and January saw the best returns ever. The store now has been temporarily closed since March 12, but I'm still seeing clients upon appointments, those in need of a new pair of glasses or repairing. I will have a new website that will be live next week, but will not be for e-commerce. Working alone makes it hard to follow external demands, plus I am really scared of returns. We all know how hard it is to find a perfect pair of eyewear. So here is my question. What should I be doing at this time? How do I not lose what I have achieved? Thank you all.
Great question. And Pip, I think that one sort of speaks to a lot of what people are saying these days and sort of how do they think about what the future might look like, but also prioritize what they're doing right now. What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it there's no definite answer to this because we don't necessarily know what the future holds. But I think within the founder community right now, I think there is an appetite that we have to try and cut costs as much as we can to get through this period, which can be challenging. Obviously, there is a lot of government support that is available right now, whether that's support on your rent, for example, and being able to delay rent so that you can get through this period, whether it's support on things like national insurance. So I think the first thing any business really needs to do is definitely look at their costs. And is there a way to take advantage of government schemes right now to scale back costs? In terms of staying active, the businesses that are doing this really well right now are empathizing massively with what's happening in the world. And how can they add value to their customers? How can they add value to their clients that really resonates with them right now? And, you know, people are always going to need eyewear, you know, glasses wearer myself. Is there ways that they can operate digitally, whether that is virtual events, for example, where people could get advice on things? I think this is the time to go, okay, what do my customers need in this new world and how can I quickly build something to help them?
Very well said. Pip, thank you for your time. This has been very enlightening.
Pleasure. Really enjoyed being on the show. And stay safe, everyone.
Pip Jameson, founder and CEO of The Dots. Now, we're going to stay in London for this week's feature interview with Nils Leonard, founder of Uncommon Creative Studio. Nils is also former chairman and chief creative officer at Grey London. Uncommon was launched just over 2 years ago with three people and no clients. They've now grown to a team of 55 people working on 26 brands, with a turnover of around £9 million. They've also incubated Halo, a company which produces and sells premium quality coffee in compostable pods, which are Nespresso compatible. Nils is, of course, a previous guest on this show, and one of the first people I thought to call up for some clarity and vision on how to think about brand and messaging in this surreal time. He's also no stranger to working through a crisis, nor with having to be quick to finding solutions and new avenues for growth for demanding clients. Case in point, as our new reality set in recent weeks, Nils and his team rolled out two new campaigns, one for Scottish brewery BrewDog and for the UK broadcaster ITV. Here's our conversation now, where I started by asking Nils about the nuts and bolts of how Uncommon has reacted to this pandemic.
I think the first thing to say is weirdly Uncommon. We have our whole positioning around, I guess, you know, our opening quote that we've always loved is the woods are burning, you know, from Death of a Salesman. I don't give a crap about stories or of the past or any crap of that kind because the woods are burning, you know, and it's an interesting positioning because our whole thing is almost rooted in the idea of, I guess, threat or crisis or some sense of, you know, impending change. So to some degree, the actual sort of company and Uncommon have kind of responded in full force because it feels like something we can play a really, really active role in. Of course, That doesn't mean it's been easy. You know, almost all of our clients have been hit by this naturally, as well as the ventures that we're founding. You know, and really it's about applying, I suppose, the energy that comes with dealing with something like this into every opportunity that comes our way. So we're trying to do that. You know, staffing and all that sort of stuff, remote working has been fine but difficult. We're a very fast company. So we've found it very hard to be in this place where, you know, you take turns talking on an app. I saw a tweet from someone the other day who said, you know, oh, it's amazing. It's actually teaching us to listen that we have to talk one at a time. And I thought to myself, maybe, but not really, because humans are far cleverer than that. We're intuitive and we're interruptive and we collide. I miss that, even with the genius that is Zoom. Yeah, I think we're missing a little bit of that. So that's a shame.
Yeah, certainly meetings with clients and handshakes is a huge part of what you guys do. But interestingly, now in this time, you guys had to be very reactive, and you've got a couple of campaigns on the go right now. I wonder if you could just tell us about that.
I mean, honestly, we almost responded instantly with every single one of the brands partners that we have, and just started thinking, right, okay, you know, with all their resources, with all of their, you know, reach and their fame and the business that they're in, what could they possibly do to help? And I don't mean, you know, I think there's a big divide here, by the way. Let me just leap in and say, between how can we possibly use this to, you know, be famous or sell product? That isn't what we did at all. We looked far more to the companies that we were with and said, well, what could and should they be doing in a moment like this? You know, we have one relationship with James Watt, the founder of BrewDog. We've made some work with those guys before, as well as a couple of ventures that we're cooking up. And you know, we went to them with an idea to create some hand sanitizer using their distilleries. James had a similar thought and leapt on it. So, you know, and James has this amazing momentum. You know, I don't know if you've ever met him or spoken to him, but I think he's an incredible force, actually, in what he does. But, you know, he just sort of got straight behind it and, you know, they were repackaging up in the distillery up in Scotland and getting it all out. And what I love is that, you know, I think the first 1,000 bottles maybe were plastic, but now they're in beer bottles and, you know, there's sanitizer in beer bottles and all that other stuff. So I think it's really, really good when that happens, when it isn't our business. So that's one idea we did, which is just punk sanitizer for those guys, you know. And the other idea that we started cooking up immediately was, I guess, a sequel to our work for ITV. So we made a project called Britain Yet Talking with those guys last year that we launched by interrupting live television, you know, and trying to give space back to people in the rooms that they were in to actually just have a conversation, because the statistics around the amount we're actually speaking and communicating as families is quite scary right now. And so obviously all this kicked off and we realised actually, you know, a massive side effect to this is if we were isolated before, well, we're going to be in forced isolation. It's only going to cement some of those problems. So what can we possibly do? So very recently, we did a similar call out, basically looking for people's messages to each other that we were then going to elevate and play on the main channel as programming, which I think will be a first. You know, so all throughout the schedule, over the next month, you're just going to see all these messages, you know, from people to each other, just to try and keep each other going. And there's a weird, I guess, kind of hand grenade of empathy that happens anytime you see someone's genuine message to somebody else. You can't help but think about the people in your life that you're close to. So, you know, we hope a powerful reaction to seeing that is that people are going to communicate more themselves. So hopefully that's done both those ideas justice in about 30 seconds. I don't know whether that made any sense to you.
No, totally. And I'm just curious about, with this work and this focus for the team, I wonder if that has sort of helped you guys stay on track and you know, stay prioritized and organized in your day, because you've got these great projects to work on.
Honestly, 100% it has. I think before this happened, I firmly, firmly believed that crisis and frustration or threat or impending change were motivating. You know, they're very much the makeup of our thinking. It's all about responding to that. And as a result, you know, it does mean you're focused on those things. You don't have an indulgent moment to twiddle your moustache and go, well, what should we all do today? You know, there is this, I think that's where Uncommon's energy comes from, is this constant reaction to the world as it is, not just the categories that we play in. Of course, when this kicked off, I think our natural reaction was almost to do what we do normally, but on crack. So it has been amazing, you know, and we've almost put the blinkers on to some degree around some of the fear and some of the trepidation and all that sort of stuff. Or we've managed to so far, just leaning into these projects. It has been brilliant, and we've been very lucky to have client partners who see the world like we do and are going for it. you know, to some degree, it's a mixed bag. But the partners we tend to have really do tend to see themselves, you know, as not having a choice as to play a role. You know, so I think how to do that wisely and appropriately with authenticity and all that other stuff is the task. But yeah, it's been good. You know, it's an interesting time.
Well, on that, in your career and back when you were at Grey London, and you've worked through crises before, the financial crash and recessions and things like that. But what I'm hearing from everyone I speak to now, Niels, is that it's just a day-to-day thing. We've never been in this situation before, and that's obviously cliche now. But the other thing is that we're getting emails and messages from, you know, the CEOs of every brand we've ever come across or every company we've ever bought something from. People, I think, just feel they need to say something right now, but that is very sensitive. I wonder how you're thinking about that, if at all, with the clients that you have.
Oh, man, that's, you know, it's super hard, isn't it? There was a joke I saw, which was someone wrote, you know, oh, great, every company I ever gave my email to is telling me how they're responding to the crisis, you know, and it's like, it's so true that, frankly, if you haven't made your mind up, it may feel cathartic to communicate as a brand, but honestly, I'm not sure whether it's additive in any positive way to what's happening in the world. So I guess I would think about that. I mean, I would describe our positioning on that as at the far end of, you know, just attempting in every interaction you have to create the largest positive impact you can. You know, and I think, you know, whether it's finding a way for the company to just extend what it does, to open up what it does more easily, just to react to it. You know, when you start a company of any sort, be it Uncommon or the brands we've started, Halo and a couple of the others, you can't help but see the world as it is and not just the category you're in. And it's a horrific side effect of the ad industry that we just think about the category we're in and how we can possibly play a part in that. And you know, what's the brand's purpose is a big question you hear a lot. But nobody's asking enough, what's yours? You know, what's your purpose? And I think ultimately this all comes back to people, you know, which is that there are people running these brands. The CMOs, the CEOs of these brands are people. And if they wake up wanting to react and play a part in it, they need partners who understand that. So our view has always been to think on their behalf as if we were owners or founders of the business and to not give them anything we think would in danger or get in the way, but always to give them things we think that would really move the needle. And there's another weird thing I just would love to talk about, which is I also think in the ad industry, there is an incredible temptation to make things a choice that aren't. You know, we love a black or white choice. You know, is it effective or is it famous? You know, well, hang on, what? You know, and I think the choice at the moment is, well, can brands be doing good for the world or should they just be sticking to being brands and selling stuff? And it's like, well, hang on a minute. I really don't see the disconnect. You know, I've started a couple of companies now and I absolutely want Uncommon to be known for trying to have a positive impact on the world. And I don't think there's absolutely anything wrong with anyone who started a brand that wants to do the same thing. You know, it's not about, I think, trying to be predatory or cash in on a situation at all. It's about going, look, this matters to us and we would like to take part in the positive side of events here if we can. You know, so I would just love to sort of put that on the record because I think you're watching the ad industry descend at the moment on Twitter in particular into a conversation around whether or not we're allowed to even think about positively improving the situation, which I find galling.
Well, on that, you know, so many people are just reacting and trying to do the best for their community and their clients and their customers. And that's not necessarily for the goodwill, I think, but perhaps in a strange way, it will get companies to start thinking about this more generally when we get past this.
Yeah, I think so. I really hope so. You know, I think this one is super weird and personal. Do you know the strangest side effect of this one is its effect is the thing I think humans are worst at, which is losing each other. You know, it's super odd when there is something like a war or a disease, because I was thinking about it and they're all fucking terrible, forgive my French, but they are. But this is very, very hard in that it's a forced separation that's happening. And we're so, so bad at it as people. And I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a strange place to be. Everything else in the world to this point has connected us. You know, and even in other crises, you can rally together as a unit. You can come together and fight a foe or share your sorrow. This is very, very difficult. So I think it is a bit messy, you know, but I do think it's forcing people to work out where they stand on it all. Yeah. And I think you raise a really interesting point, Daniel, around how brands communicate and stuff. You know, you're absolutely right. I saw a couple of emails and almost my favourite ones were the ones where they were like, but we really don't know what to do. And we're sending this email because we've had to send everyone home. And, you know, the super honesty of it all. I wonder if we're going to see, you know, we've suggested a couple of projects to our clients. So I can't say which client, but one of our clients has said to us, you know, we had this whole shoot lined up and the whole concept lined up and it's all gone wrong. And, you know, now we've got all this stuff. What should we do with it? And we were like, well, just tell the world exactly what you just told us. So tell, you know, because I think everyone's in the same place, you know, and I actually think it would be weirdly very beautiful and honest and open to say, we were going to do this campaign because we really, really want you all to, you know this new product exists, but it all went wrong. And this is how it went wrong. And this is what we've done instead, you know, and I kind of feel like there might be a really lovely twist on all this where everyone gets a bit more honest and we realize that there is no difference.
Niels, if I could just ask a personal question on you and how you're sort of navigating your way through this. I mentioned before, earlier, most of the people I'm speaking to are saying day to day, but you have to look ahead as well, and you have to guide the team. At the same time, people are looking to you for answers. So how do you sort of, you know, leave out the noise of everything that's happened in the world and get back to trying to keep the business on track?
Yeah, well, there are, you know, it's a really interesting thing, isn't it, in the world right now. I think we're all just responding as people, right? But we still run businesses and people still need stuff. And I think there is going to be a realization. So sorry, my knee-jerk reaction to your question was going to be, well, remembering that it's not always going to be like this. You know, and if you look at Italy, if you look at the stages that Italy went through and we're in a very fearful stage, rightly, right now, you know, but you started to see glimmers of hope and optimism and you know, personal power come back out of Italy. And you're looking into the future going, well, okay, I've got to believe that it's not going to be like this. This isn't endless, this state we're in. And I think bringing that energy into as many conversations as you can is super important, you know, in the way that we're all very, very lucky to be with each other and to have the opportunities we have at our feet. And this is a very tough time and we must react in this time, but we also must believe that it's not going to be like this. And part of what we plan to do as creative people, right, is have a vision for a future that might be different. That's half of what we do. We kid ourselves into believing in something. You know, it's the con of being a creative. I'm going to conjure this thing that doesn't exist and hopefully pull enough people together to make it exist. And so I think bringing that energy into the room is really, really, really important. You know, I think creativity and creatives deal in hope. So ultimately, our roles as leaders, if that's what we're doing in that space, is to bring that hope to bear and make everyone feel it in a time when it's super easy to get caught in fear. And I think that's ultimately it. I heard a brilliant thing recently, Daniel, which was there are two types of politics. You ever hear this? There's fear and there's hope. That's it. And some politicians deal in fear, and it's a very powerful motivator. So that would be, they're coming, build a wall, you know, you should be scared, vote for me, I'll help. And some politicians deal in hope, which is the belief that things can change for the better if we get behind it. And the only thing that can beat fear is the hope thing. And so I think ultimately, in any and every situation like this, you've just got to bring that in. But there are going to be difficult conversations. We do run businesses. We need money to stay open. This is our lives, you know, so there'll be tough conversations being had all around by everybody, I'm sure. But I would love to believe there's never been more empathy in a more open way because of the way we digest brands now around that too, which is why I think it's super important that everyone understands why your brand's here. You know, it has to exist outside of just wanting to make some money.
Niels, very well said, and thank you for this.
Awesome. Wonderful. Thanks, Daniel.
Niels Leonard, the founder of Uncommon Creative Studio. Thanks to Niels for coming on and to Pip Jameson. Thanks as well to our producer, Holly Fisher, and to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. Don't forget to get your questions in for next week's expert panel, question@monocle.com. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.
UBS has over 900 investment analysts from over 100 different countries.
Over 900 of the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance today.
To find out how we could help you,
contact us at ubs.com.